anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, I'm Sue. I know something about history that you don't know, and I am an anomaly.
My name is Casey. When are we going to get there? I'm hungry. This car smells weird. And I am an anomaly.
Welcome to Anomaly Supplemental, the episode where I made Casey watch the classic film National Treasure.
Sue, would you say that this film is itself a national treasure?
I would. I love this ridiculous movie. Oh, my. Hey, you've been making fun of me for this movie, I think, since we agreed to it. But you agreed to it. So
I did
it's
agree
your fault.
To it. Well, I had never seen National Treasure, and I remember seeing previews and thinking they're going to steal the Declaration of Independence. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now that I've had experience with my job involves, you know, touching older books and dealing with older documents sometimes. I watch this movie and I have opinions and thoughts.
We'll talk about those things. But first, what you been up to since The Left Hand of Darkness, which was not that long ago?
I did start a new book for the Book Riot Reading Challenge. I am starting to read The Little Prince.
Oh.
So, yeah. First chapter almost made me cry. I'm like, what is this?
You know what? We have mentioned the Book Riot Reading Challenge a couple times, but I don't think we've said what it is.
It's a reading challenge.
Right, but it's not just like read this many books. It's, I think, 26, so approximately 2 a month if you do it in a year, different categories of books. So I think you're trying to cover as many categories as possible with as few books as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying not to have any overlaps. So it's the opposite.
Well, I also have a lot of other books on my reading list that don't have anything to do with the reading challenge. And there are just not that many audiobooks in my life, so or available through my library. So I have to be very strategic with what I read for the book club. And also, I really did want to try to read as many female authors as I could for the Book Riot Challenge. But at the same time, I've heard A Little Prince is great. And that is one of the books that all of my female friends keep recommending to me. So that's what I started reading. And you know, general life stuff, which is working, starting with a puppetry improv troupe and learning how to play the ukulele, maybe?
Kind of. Well, kind more of. Than kind of.
Yeah, I'm actually making a dedicated effort to try to learn how to play the ukulele. At least 30 minutes a day to build up calluses on my fingers.
Oh, wow. That is a dedicated effort. Good job.
Well, at the same time, it hurts because pressing down on chords, ouchies.
Right.
I finally got the strumming down, but I still need to learn the chords and the placement of my fingers and how to progress from chords. Mm. So my right hand is great. My left hand is going to need to do some work. And then I'll play nerdy songs sometimes.
Yes.
I mean, my husband already knows the theme song from Adventure Time. Maybe I can learn that. Who knows?
Adventure Time confuses me.
Yeah, but it's fun. I like Lumpy Space Princess. What can I say?
I really like Steven Universe.
I've heard about Steven Universe.
A whole lot of it, I think most of it, is available on Hulu. And it's just, it's ridiculous and fun and just great.
I've heard the same thing about Gravity Falls.
Yes. I've only seen a little bit of Gravity Falls. But Steven Universe is only like 10-minute episodes.
Mm.
So it goes by really fast if you just put on continuous play and sit down.
I know the three cartoons I need to watch are Steven Universe, Gravity Falls, and Bee and Puppy Cat.
Excuse you?
There is a show called Bee and Puppy Cat. And it was created by a girl who really enjoys anime. And it's about a girl and her puppy cat.
That sounds excellent.
Yeah.
So I actually recently finished a book that was, believe it or not, my first Star Wars novel.
Really?
I know. Technically a, I guess a young adult book, but it's called Moving Target. And it is the story of Leia sort of leading into The Force Awakens. And I actually thought it was really, really well done. And I especially like the voice that they wrote Leia in. So highly recommend it. Apparently it's a whole series of different characters leading up to, they do a book for each character leading into that movie. But I've only read this one, the Leia one, but highly recommended.
I like hearing when books based in an established universe are good, because sometimes I look at them and I assume that it's going to be bad fanfic. In other news, we watch National Treasure.
Yes.
Transition.
Oh my gosh. So, starring Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage, which is how we will be referring to him today, as a reminder. National Treasure was released in 2004, and in case you don't know about it, Nick Cage's character's name is Benjamin Franklin Gates. And he descends from a family of treasure seekers who've all hunted for the same thing, a war chest hidden by the Founding Fathers after the Revolutionary War. Ben's close to discovering its whereabouts, as is his competition, but the FBI is also hip to the hunt. Thank you, IMDb, for the phrase hip to the hunt.
I am not calling him Benjamin Franklin Gates.
You can call him Nick Cage.
I am calling him Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage.
Okay.
What's funny is that Nick Cage gets a lot of shit for the movies that he's in now.
Yeah.
Because he made some bad choices financially. But the thing is, he has an Academy Award, and he's actually a good actor. But this is the pinnacle of ridiculous.
I love it so much. So it's this, I think I know why, right? Because it hits me right in like three sweet spots. It is silly and ridiculous, which I love, but it's not like crude humor. It's just like silliness. It is a scavenger hunt where, you know, one clue leads to the next clue, leads to a riddle, leads to something else. And I love that. And revolutionary history, which I'm not going to say that I'm like a fanatic over. I can't rattle off facts, but it has always been the part of American history that I have been the most interested in and probably could tell you the most about. So it's just this trifecta of like things that I'm interested in. And it's always on TV. It's one of those movies that if I see it when I'm flipping through channels, I just watch the rest of it.
I remember sitting down to watch it, and Kevin was sitting next to me, and he had seen it. And he was about to, like, fast forward through some part of the movie, and I said, "What are you doing? I have to watch the whole thing." And he's like, "I am trying to do you a favor." Like, maybe the opening credits or something. I don't remember.
You mean the flashback within a flashback within a flashback?
Oh, no. I watched that part. I mean, the part where they actually show names and stuff. But, oh, my God. The Inception flashback was, okay, so Academy Award winning actor Christopher Plummer has a bit part in this. As Nick Cage's granddad. in this flashback to the 1970s, where Baby Cage is in the attic and his grandfather tells him the story about this treasure map. It went back to the 1770s, and then all of a sudden the flashback took place in, like, earlier than that, and then it transferred over into ancient Egypt. And all of a sudden, I don't know what flashback is the real one. Also, I was very sick, and I'm, like, slightly drugged up and feverish, and I'm like, what is happening?
Brilliance. Brilliance is happening.
And then we're introduced to Academy Award-winning actor John Voight, who plays the father of Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage. And he is sort of bitter and over the whole treasure hunting thing because he's just like, oh, it's all just a dead end. But then Baby Cage grows up into Nick Cage and he's going into, like, full-on treasure hunting mode. What else about this movie? I was slightly distracted by my dog. I kind of want to read Ebert's review.
Okay. Well, first, I think there's a preface to that, right?
Yeah. It's
that this movie came out in 2004, 2 years before the Da Vinci Code movie. However, just a year after the Da Vinci Code book. But it is clearly two supposedly independently created stories that follow very similar patterns. Not to say that this whole type of clue after clue treasure hunt did not exist before, but it is a really small window for multiple things like this to, I think, occur.
And just to make note, this is a Jerry Bruckheimer production, so it's the same crew that brought you Pirates of the Caribbean, all of the other boom explosion movies that aren't Michael Bay, that sort of thing.
But so this isn't a boom explosion movie.
Well, there are, like, two explosions.
There are some chase scenes, but I would say it's more of like it's a legit treasure hunt movie. It's like an adventure movie.
It is a legit treasure hunt movie.
More than it is like a summer blockbuster.
Yes.
Anyway.
So Roger Ebert, the late Roger Ebert, wrote in his review of National Treasure, "If you are one of the millions like me who plowed through the Da Vinci Code, you can be forgiven for thinking they've made it into a movie. And in a way, they have. But the movie is titled National Treasure. This new Jerry Bruckheimer production is so similar in so many ways to the plot of the Dan Brown bestseller that either A, the filmmakers are the only citizens of the entertainment industry who have not heard of the Da Vinci Code. No, not even the countless people on set who must have been reading the book. Or B, they have ripped it off. My attorneys advise me that A is the prudent answer." 2 stars.
I don't know about that, right? Because the movie had to have been filming in 2003.
Right.
So how coincidency can this get?
And also, there's really no such thing as an original idea.
Right.
So the Da Vinci Code and National Treasure are based on, you know, other similar plots to this that may have gone over a little bit better. Wasn't a fan of the Da Vinci Code either. So, well, not that I'm not a fan of this movie. The more I think about it, like, after the movie, I'm like, what did I just watch? I don't think I could watch that again. But the more I think about it, the more I want to sit down with my friends and have drinks and yell out commentary at the movie. Kind of like what I did on Facebook.
That's what this movie is good for.
Exactly. I'd love to hear a Riff Tracks version of this movie. I'm sure it exists. But yeah, there are other treasure hunt movies. I mean, Treasure Island. Come on. So, those are my feelings. No offense to the late Roger Ebert, who wanted to make a joke. Okay, what else?
Well, you're the one who live Facebooked the movie. So I ask you, what else?
Okay, so there are a couple of things that I feel like it's just so obvious that these things are happening. First of all, I've forgotten most of the characters' names.
Not important.
Not at all important. So we have our deadpan comedic relief, Justin Bartha, who I just call Comic Relief, or Baby Bill Murray.
Or Riley Poole is that character's name.
Or Baby Bill Murray.
I love this character in this film. I know you think it's a little overplayed, but I think maybe because I saw this movie in 2004, that type of stereotypical character was fresher 12 years ago. Like that sarcastic deadpan kind of comedy.
Yeah.
Maybe like, I just like it because I like it. I don't know.
Well, like I said, it reminds me a lot of how Bill Murray plays his comedy. And I feel like that made a big comeback in 2004 or the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Because the 90s were pretty much for Robin Williams and Jim Carrey comedy, where it was like very eccentric and physical. And then Bill Murray, deadpan type humor, it had been a while. Mm-hmm. So when it made its comeback in the 2000s, in like Steve Carell is also really good at it. In his own absurd way, Zach Galifianakis kind of does it too. So it was fresher back then. But now it's 2016 and everyone is trying to do it. So I'm watching the movie going, oh, it's this guy. Okay. That dog. And then there's Sean Bean, who starts out as a comrade friend, but you know he's going to be the bad guy. You're pretty sure he might die. There is a 70% chance that he will die, but there is a 100% chance that he will turn like he did in GoldenEye. And guess what? He did.
The IMDb trivia, with no references and no numbers, just has a sentence that says, "This is one of the few movies where Sean Bean doesn't die."
I know.
It's like, thank you. That was helpful. Like, come on.
Like, to me, that was a major twist. I was expecting him to fall to his death.
No, like, he just goes to jail. No,
he just goes to jail. And then another important character in this is blonde love interest. You know, historian, slightly younger than Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage.
As is the custom in Hollywood.
Yes. And everybody in the movie tells her to shut up. Just everyone. Mm-hmm. It kind of got to a point where I'm like, Kent, she has a point. Why are you stealing an extremely fragile document?
Yeah.
You should shut up. No, you should. Academy Award winning actor Nicolas Cage.
That character is clearly the most qualified person to handle this document and do whatever they need to do to it, yet is the one that is least trusted somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a great character, but she does have a really great scene that I love. So they're trying to get away from Sean Bean and his henchmen, and she jumps behind this counter at like a deli, and the woman who's working there is like, "You can't be back here." And she's like, "No, I need to get away from my ex-husband." And the woman working there looks up and she's like, "You just stay here as long as you want." And I just love that. It reminds me of that Tumblr post of like, if a guy is bothering you, any woman should be able to go up to any other woman and pretend that you're old friends. You know?
Yep.
I like it a lot. But really, that's her only scene where she's not, for the most part, playing second fiddle.
Right. Also, it is important to note that Academy Award nominee Harvey Keitel is also in this movie.
Oh my gosh.
Also known as the Wolf from Pulp Fiction.
Are you just Googling everybody's awards before you say their names?
Do you know how many people have been nominated for Oscars? So, Academy Award nominee Harvey Keitel plays an FBI agent. I kind of like his character a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. He has a sense of humor about the whole thing. He's not super serious. He's kind of the logic of the movie. Like, where was the security for the Declaration of Independence?
Right, yeah.
Why? How does this stuff happen?
I like it when he's talking to the FBI guys. And they're like, yeah, he told us that he thought somebody was going to steal it. So where's the open file? We didn't believe him. And just the look that he gives them. It's so great. But also, you get the impression, because at the very end, they zoom in on a ring he's wearing, which has the Freemason symbol on it. So you're kind of given the impression that he has known this treasure was real the whole time, because mm-hmm. he's part of the secret society that hid it, even though nobody found it before. But yeah, it's like he knows more than he lets on, even though that wouldn't make any sense. Not that most of this makes any sense.
None of this makes sense, Sue. None of it makes sense.
I was reading through some of... Well, okay, so first of all, back up. Nick Cage is pulling, like, these riddles.
Wait. Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage.
Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage. His character is reading these riddles and just saying random words, which is called out by Justin Bartha at the very beginning. He starts yelling, Albuquerque, snorkel, which is great. But it keeps happening, and he's just like, oh, so that must mean this, and therefore this. And, like, these random connections that it could be anything lead to the correct answer. Like, that's how this goes. But the facts that they put together to solve the riddles, some of them don't make any sense. There are so many errors. There's, like, a specific time they have to look at a shadow on a wall, and they make a big deal about correcting for daylight savings time. But there are so many other issues with that, because the shadow is only going to fall in the right place on a certain day of the year at that specific time. But standardized timetables weren't even invented for another 100 years. Like, so many problems. They're up on a roof and a steeple that was torn down and replaced. They're in a church that was destroyed and rebuilt. And Trinity Church, under which this treasure is buried later, like, that's in not lower Manhattan, but downtown, I would say. So, like, below 34th Street, the southern end of Manhattan. And there just isn't that much land under the ground there. Like, if those tunnels were dug that deep, they would be filled with water. But I don't care, because it's fun.
One of my favorite parts of this movie is, like you said, Nick Cage is spouting off all these riddles, and he's solving them with shit that doesn't make sense. And they find this knife totem thingy. What is it?
The pipe?
Yes, the pipe. First of all, quick note. He cuts his finger with that knife so that way he can, like, smear his blood on there. And I'm like, dude, that knife is real old. You're asking for diseases. Did you get your tetanus shot? Mm-hmm. But then you fast forward to the end of the movie, and he looks at a shape on the wall that could lead to a secret door. And it's shaped like that pipe. And he says, could it really be that simple? I'm like, dude, you found that in the fucking Arctic after riddles. What makes you think that's simple?
But also, good thing he still has it with him and not like, well, I don't need this anymore.
I do have a theory that historians and rare document and book collectors kind of border on hoarding and being hoarders. So it totally makes sense to me that he would just keep it.
It's so ridiculous. And the geography is like, there are things. Okay, maybe this is a, you know, growing up in the Northeast thing. I have often been to Philadelphia and Boston, and I lived in Boston for 4 years, and, you know, whatever. But I watch this movie and see how quickly they're getting from one place to the other. I'm like, are these characters the Flash? Did they just run 5 miles in 2 minutes? Because, you know, the National Archives are not that close to the Lincoln Memorial.
Also, why is there a ship in the Arctic from the 1700s?
Well, I'm not an expert, but I apparently don't know the rest of that quote.
So, oh, here's another part that I really like. Love interest figures out who Academy Award winning actor Nicolas Cage is, and they're fighting over the declaration, and he sees Sean Bean coming, and he's just like, you know what, you go ahead and hold on to it. And she's walking away and she's taken hostage. And Nicolas Cage is like, oh no. And I wrote down, you knew Sean Bean was there, Nicolas Cage. And now the love interest is Sean Bean's hostage. This is why you can't have nice things like national treasures.
Oh my goodness.
Shortly thereafter, she's saved. And Nicolas Cage says, we did the only thing we could to keep the declaration safe. Love interest stares at him and then just hits him. Like, that is the appropriate reaction. Because stealing the declaration to keep it safe after he is shot at and goes through like these really dangerous situations, that is not safe. That poor Declaration of Independence. We're going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
That thing would be like crumbled to pieces going through this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's using gloves. They're throwing acid and heat on it. It's really, like, really unfortunate.
Like, paper that old is already pretty fragile.
Yeah.
It can stiffen and be super brittle if you apply heat.
Don't you love how he just rolls it up like it's a poster?
It is not a poster!
Oh, that is not how it works.
You have to be really careful with that. But yes, that poor Declaration of Independence is just like carried around like it is one of the replica posters that they sell. Why would they sell replica posters?
I mean, all of the places sell replica posters.
That's so weird.
Oh no, that's definitely a thing.
Like, I figure it's a thing. But if I'm going to decorate my wall, I don't want it to be with a fake Declaration of Independence. My wall space is very valuable. I have prints from Etsy I need to buy. Why would I buy a Declaration of Independence? Also, another thing about this movie that weirded me out was the idea that they went to an Urban Outfitters to get civilian clothes so that they could blend into the crowd after being in evening wear for the first part of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And the idea of Nicolas Cage wearing hipstery Urban Outfitters clothes just seems off to me.
Well, again, 2004. In 2004, Urban Outfitters was selling all those state t-shirts.
I don't think I'd even heard about Urban Outfitters in 2004.
What is wrong with your dog?
I don't know. Why are you upset? I do remember while I was sick, he was like laying next to me on the couch while we were watching this movie. And it's very rare for my dog to be fascinated by the television anymore, but he's just like staring at this movie as if even he doesn't know what's happening. But it's really fascinating.
That is the correct reaction to have to this movie.
Kind of like when I started watching Doctor Who and he's like, huh. And then he was suddenly over at him, which is like, I understand you like it. Play with me. Play with me.
So one thing I actually think is kind of interesting about this movie is that it was originally, I guess, sent to the MPAA under the Touchstone Pictures banner. But when it came back with a PG rating, they decided to release it as a Walt Disney Pictures production. And I guess the idea was that people would perceive it as more family friendly and more people would take, you know, their kids to it if it was a Walt Disney picture that was rated PG.
Yeah, that's
think the decision making process is interesting because I think Disney is like sub banners gets really fascinating, and why they decide to release stuff in certain ways is very interesting to me. But I might be the only one who even cares.
No, I think it's fascinating too, because when you hear the name Walt Disney, you automatically assume family entertainment or a property just related to the Disney lore, like Pirates of the Caribbean. But, you know, the Touchstone Pictures banner is usually where they take more risks, because I think that's what Nightmare Before Christmas was originally released under. And, you know, there are other PG-13 movies and stuff. So knowing that switch happened, I find that fascinating, too. I'm wondering what would have happened if it had been rated PG-13.
It probably would have stayed Touchstone, I would think.
It would have stayed Touchstone, but I'm also wondering what the audience reaction would be, because there is a stigma that comes with family-friendly entertainment.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if it would have hit more of a cult status if it had been PG-13.
Well, I also wonder what the original cut was. Now, the ridiculous thing that I read that I can't even wrap my head around. This is already a movie that is a little over 2 hours long.
Yes.
But I read that the original, like the first cut of it, was over 4 hours long.
What?
Yeah. And I just want to know, like, did they just shoot extra scenes? Were there more clues that wound up cut out of the movie? Like, how was this 4 hours long? And I wonder if what they cut is accounted for it getting a PG instead of a PG-13 rating.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the movie thinking, okay, they could have done some more editing here.
Yeah.
But the idea that it was 2 additional hours longer, what were they filming?
That's what I want to know.
What scenes could they think were so important?
4 hours.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is blowing my mind.
You know what else would blow your mind? The second movie.
Okay, so am I missing anything with the second movie?
I mean, I haven't seen the second one nearly as much as I have seen the first one. It is, in my opinion, even more ridiculous. But, the same sort of relationship among that main cast. It basically starts out with Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage doing research on John Wilkes Booth when someone else presents a missing page from Booth's diary linking an ancestor of Nick Cage to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. So out to prove his ancestor's innocence, he finds information that leads him to more treasure. Somehow.
Okay.
And so this time it's an international chase. Like, they go to London. And
that doesn't make any sense. It's an America-based crime.
It is special. And they're making a third one, Casey. They're making a third one.
But what? What could they possibly go after now?
I don't know, but it is the last update I was able to find on it was from August of this last year, that it's basically caught up in development and there are script issues.
What?
Surprise, no. There are script issues. But you know what? I will watch that third movie and I will probably enjoy it, especially if I am drinking some alcohol.
So, Sue, let's say you're helping out to write with the script issues. What would you like to see in National Treasure 3?
Oh my goodness. Everything.
Obviously so many chase scenes. Would you want this to be an international romp as well? Do you want them to go to like Russia or Spain?
So it's like International Treasure, World Treasure Hunt. National Treasure, The Amazing Race. It's kind of what it is.
Maybe Nicolas Cage will have had a child by National Treasure 3, and they'll go on adventures. Continue the family tradition. Oh my god, that's what might happen. Why am I encouraging this?
Oh, maybe National Treasure 3 can be like, I don't know, trip to Area 51.
So we're going to do Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls with National Treasure 3?
Yes. I mean, Riley makes the point in the first movie that the aliens helped ancient cultures build everything. So why not?
We are not history channeling.
That was one of my favorite cosplays at Dragon Con. It was like the guy with the ridiculous disheveled hair and the suit walking around with a sign that said aliens. Like the History Channel guy. So good. Almost as good as the guy dressed as a chauffeur at an airport who would stop walking in the middle of the con floor and hold up a sign that said Godot.
Oh, that's clever.
I love it. I love clever cosplay. This might be on the shorter and sillier side of podcasting.
No kidding.
Aren't you glad I made you watch this movie?
I am a little glad I watched this movie.
I win.
Don't you most of the time, though?
Hey, you said it, not me. Do you have anything else you want to say about National Treasure or Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage? Oh, I don't mean to laugh every time I say that. It's just I am so there.
I am very proud of the achievement of this film featuring Academy Award winners Nicolas Cage, Christopher Plummer, and John Voight. Featuring the talents of Academy Award nominee Harvey Keitel. And I look forward to the day when Justin Bartha and Blonde Love Interest will win their own Academy Awards.
Blonde Love Interest's character's name, anyway, is Abigail Chase.
It doesn't matter.
I know, but I feel bad not giving her a name.
I made the playing field even. I didn't remember the names of John Voight or...
Yeah, but you at least use Grandpa. The actors' names.
Well,
yes, I understand it was a movie full of tropes, but she's the only one we called by her trope name. The character's name is Abigail Chase.
What is her actor name? I will go by her actress name. Oh, Diane Kruger. I know her. Yeah, she was in Inglourious Basterds, and she was amazing.
See, there you go.
You see, she's going to get an Academy Award nomination one day. No, I'm looking at her awards and nominations. On Wikipedia, it says she won a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actress for National Treasure.
No, does it?
It does.
Yay.
Saturn Award winning actress Diane Kruger.
But no Oscar nominations yet.
Soon. Keep starring in those Quentin Tarantino films.
Oh, my. All right. So what's happening next time, Casey?
We are going to talk about Agent Carter and Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tones are so different, but the themes are pretty close. And, you know, I just like Agent Carter and Jessica Jones.
Well, yeah. The ladies of the Marvel television universe.
Yes.
I was about to say cinematic, but it's not really.
No. MTU? It would be the MTU.
Is that a thing?
No, but I'm making it one.
Okay. And I think that's it.
All right. Sounds good. I'm Casey.
I'm Sue.
And you have been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
Is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh,
I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend, and I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval.
When did you start this?
I decided to just suck it up and start learning about a week ago.